You're listening to KHPR, the Sonic Transformation Podcast, brought to you by the Order of Taliesin of the Temple of Set. I'm Eric Caution, your host, bringing you another enlightening presentation. So sit back, relax, and prepare to kefir and remanifest.
And welcome back to KHPR. It's been a bit of a hiatus for us, but we're glad to be back and glad to be bringing the show. And I figured that the best way would be to start this off with a bang. And what better way to start it off with a bang than to bring my personal friend Fitz on and have him give a little lecture on sex magic. Fitz, thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me here.
Well, now, sex magic is one of the things that there's lots of people that talk about it, that this is the be-all to end-all. This is the thing, if you get involved with sex magic, you're on the cutting edge and you're going to get the most power from it. Where do you think this all came from originally?
Well, I think some of it has to do historically with most of contemporary sex magic comes from a time period at roughly the tail end of the 19th, the beginning of the 20th century. And at this time, honestly, talking about sexual material was very taboo. And So those people who were exploring sex magic encoded it around other magical organizations. You get organizations like the Ordo Templi Orientis, which was founded in Germany, that has, you know, a rather elaborate Freemasonic system with a core set of material related to sex magic. And most people who were members didn't know about this, and it was because you couldn't openly discuss these topics. You had to go through enough experiences where it was felt that you could be trusted with this. And because of that, because of this sort of taboo secret nature, there's a notion that it's somehow, you know, so much more powerful.
Oh, okay. But when people talk about, you know, these ancient sexual rites, really by ancient, they're talking about like end of the 19th century. There wasn't anything like that previous?
Well, there are previous versions. People have been dealing with sexuality and religion and sexuality and magic probably from the moment that human consciousness forms into something akin to what we think of as human consciousness now.
Okay.
A tremendous amount of primitive art has huge, you know, sexual imagery in it, although you don't usually see that on the National Geographic specials. There's actually a pretty good book by a fellow named B.Z. Goldberg called The Sacred Fire, A History of Ritual Religion and Human Behavior, that covers some of these, you know, how the erotic and the religious seem to have this very long-standing connection for humanity. And things like sex magic play upon this same notion, that there is a relation between sex and transcendence, of becoming something more than you are through the sexual act, because you're experiencing something more than you do in your normal everyday life. And it's something that can't be taken away. You can't legislate this form of transcendence away. You can't have a bunch of people determine in a room that, well, this isn't real, so you can't experience it. It's one of the things that doesn't go away.
Sure. Okay, well, now, you know, you were touching upon the theory, and I was doing some research on the web, and, you know, of course, the best place to look nowadays. And one of the things...
Yeah, everything on the internet has to be true, otherwise they wouldn't let them publish it.
Right. The problem is that everything I have found out there has in some way contradicted what someone else is saying out there on the web. So now I'm kind of curious, if we're all contradicting each other, what's the real theory why this supposedly works?
Well, that's going to change by different groups who are using sexuality in the context of magic, or even sexuality in the context of religion. Everybody's got their own theories.
Okay.
And it's the same way that, you know, there isn't a unified explanation for things like combat or for any human experience, because it doesn't work this way. It's not this cookie cutter. If you're using something like sexuality as a mode of self-expression, self-transcendence, it's not going to look like everyone else's. But there's this notion that you can do this kind of cookbook approach towards all magic, and sex magic especially, that if you do certain acts, you're going to get, you know, certain illuminations or develop, ironically, certain magic powers. And that's kind of bunk.
Sure.
You know, if you're trying to pursue initiation, if you're trying to become yourself only more so, what the expression of your sexuality in the process of you doing that is going to be different than anyone else's by necessity, and the results of what you do are going to be different.
Okay.
You know, some results are uniform. You have a limited range of people's physiological responses, and learning how to ride those waves and use them intentionally becomes an important part of these kinds of practices. So that's somewhat set, but the kind of subjective experiences you're going to have are your own.
Right. Well, what are some of the specific ways that these theories are used amongst people? I mean, I've heard some things with some of the more well-known organizations, you know, as an example, and I'm sure you could elaborate on some mm-hmm. of this better, but I know there are 3 degrees within the OTO that are all focused on sex magic. And each
well, at least
one,
that's how they're usually reported. And most of the material that's been published related to the so-called Sanctuary of Gnosis degrees of the OTO are related to sex magic. And this isn't, you know, I'm not revealing any big secret here. This has been published in several places, and I'm sure there's probably more to their organization than simply everything that's been published. But
sure.
Yeah, there's, you know, notions of one area concentrating on, say, autoerotic magic, other material related to heterosexual or sort of vaginal intercourse, and usually this kind of experimental area that's said to be focused on anal intercourse, but maybe dealing with something more than just that too.
Okay.
And the different OTOs, and there are various groups that are in operation today that have been influenced by the Auto Templi Orientis of Aleister Crowley, who use these kinds of terms in their own ways. The material associated with the OTO that's officially recognized by the United States, they're using it in different senses than, say, something like Kenneth Grant's Typhonian OTO.
Oh, okay.
You know, that the different people who have taken these teachings have brought their own flavor to them.
Okay, and what sort of things, I mean, you mentioned discovering more of yourself, but, I mean, is that the only thing that really comes out of...
Oh, no, a lot of it is there's a sort of a notion that if you... This is a little bit crass, but essentially it says that if you make a wish when you come, or if you encode something like a sigil, then you can make things happen.
Okay.
And the simplest version of this is probably the sigil of 3 liquids that the Temple of Psychic Youth uses, which involves sort of writing some sort of fantasy of, you know, what your ideal world would look like, and usually it deals with sexual topics, building this really compelling future, and then masturbating to it. I kind of jokingly refer to this as building a future so compelling you want to fuck it, which tends to make people want to do things to make that happen.
And
the idea is that you've also, in addition to the kinds of things that you're going to do to try to make this happen, you're magically forcing the hand of chance. You're making it more likely magically for these outcomes to take place.
That's interesting.
And that's what most magic deals with. And I think Topi really identified this very well. And one of the other groups currently associated with a lot of sexual elements in their magical practice, groups like the Illuminates of Thanateros, that, you know, the idea of magic is you're forcing the hand of chance. You're trying to make events more likely to happen when you're doing operative magic, or when you're doing the kinds of magics dealing with changes in the outside world.
Sure, because, I mean, one of the things I was thinking of at first was when you were talking about, you know, discovering more of yourself, I'm, like, thinking, man, what would that do to your sex life if you discover that you're really an asshole? You know?
I think more people probably should discover that, because more people are assholes than they usually, you know, recognize. It's,
well, yeah,
that like Robert it's kind of like Robert Anton Wilson has this line about, you know, being a cosmic schmuck, and
right.
that the less you recognize the possibility that you are a cosmic schmuck, the greater the chances that you are one.
But I think it's really interesting that there are different ways to apply this that, you know, considering the subject matter, I guess this isn't going to be considered very crass, but I mean, you
sure.
could essentially have a boinking ritual for more money or,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
things
and
like that.
If you look at Aleister Crowley, who's probably the best known 20th century sex magician, a lot of his sexual entries in his diaries are just for those kinds of things.
Sure.
You know, it's just kind of practically geared, like, you know, I want more money, want the house, want the car, want the job. You know, it's about desire. And I suppose you could say that a lot of people who are engaged in sex magic are using a very obvious physical manifestation of desire and how you try and fulfill desire to carry these sorts of magical intentions with it.
Right.
That where you can, you know, where some people will take the time to, when they're doing magical work, they'll, you know, enchant a certain set of magical tools, whether it's things like traditional Western esoteric stuff like, you know, grail cups and wands and daggers and things. And people who are engaged in sex magic will often feel and do the same sorts of attempts to make certain objects sacred about their own attitude towards their sexuality. And rather than manipulating things symbolically on the altar, they're engaging in certain sexual acts towards magical ends.
Sure. And also, too, I mean, on a more base level, I mean, I've seen people who have done things that I can't remember the name of the album, but it was one of Metallica's albums that the guy who did the cover for it did this piece of artwork called Blood and Semen. And he basically sandwiched both liquids between two pieces of glass and took a photograph.
Sure,
of it.
Sure.
And I mean, you know, you look at it and you kind of, everyone gets a reaction from that. And it's something that.
Oh, well, it's so visceral.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And it's something that causes change within people when in reality, it's sort of an indirect result. There is no physical act going on when you see it. It's an after the fact. It's almost as if this is created as a sigil to cause people to react to it, to cause change.
Yeah, well, that's really a lot of the collage work that you see someone like Genesis Peorage do when he was involved with the Temple of Psychic Youth, and he's still doing some of this kind of work today, is the same intent of trying to sort of collect certain ideas and images to represent desires, and then to use a sexual act to kind of catalyze or bring these things together as a piece of intention, and then either hiding this intention or, you know, sharing it with certain people, burning it, whatever. However people sort of react to these kinds of things. Different things seem to require different kinds of endings. Or even one of my favorite stories about somebody having other people engage in sex magic for their own success was Grant Morrison with The Invisibles. This is a comic book series that was published through most of a good chunk of the 90s. And early on, there was a big, you know, a slack off in the sales of the thing. And so he ended up explaining the basics of sigil magic in the letters column, included a sigil for success, increased sales and success of the book, and asked his readers to beat off to it.
Okay.
It's been referred to as the Invisibles Wankathon.
Wow.
And it worked. I mean, the series ended up where they thought it was going to tank at that point in the series. It ended up running through until, I think, the last issue was published in January 2000.
Uh-huh.
Which was the completion of the story, of all the story arcs that he was planning on writing for the series. So it managed to work, to, you know, for him.
Yeah, I mean, did he get any sort of backlash from, like, the Catholic Church, or were they even, like,
well, I don't really think that they've been reading Vertigo published comics.
Well, that's true. That's very true. I should have thought of that.
You know, I don't think that, and this is something that's happened a lot more, is that these techniques, these things that used to be so secret and so, you know, kept behind closed doors and hush hush, you had to go through X number of initiations before we, you know, tell you this part of the story.
Right.
It's all over the place. You know, this material has shown up. Anywhere you go on the internet, you'll find all sorts of people talking a lot of sex magic and very often not doing a whole lot of it.
Yeah.
There's a couple of good books that are in print. Frater UD's, I believe it's currently titled Secrets of Western Sex Magic, although it's had a few different titles through its publication history. It outlines a very, very good practical introduction towards learning sex magic.
Hmm.
Yeah, it takes you, without it being too deeply connected to any one tradition, it takes you through a fair amount of the methodologies and a fair amount of the history of these kinds of techniques, both taking things from, you know, traditions like Tantra or the Taoist sexual practices and mixing them with the things out of the Western esoteric tradition. But it's a good little starter book. There's been a few others that have been published. Some of them are a little fluffier than others, and they're not quite as interesting. I think the UD book is probably one of the best sort of single volumes to go with.
Okay, are there any other books that you think would be good for people? Because, I mean, I'm sure, you know, as I said, I was searching out on the web and everyone was contradicting themselves, so maybe one or two of these people did have it right, in at least to the best of your knowledge, and, you know, maybe you want to steer clear of these books, and or pretty much, if you're really interested, go look at these books. You know, other than Frater UD, what other materials that you might want to recommend are out there?
Well, I think actually a lot of people make the mistake of trying to approach sex magic from the magical side first.
Okay.
There's a practice associated with SETI and initiation known as the Polarian method, which involves getting the best objective understanding of a given thing, engaging in a subjective attempt to synthesize this information, and then communicating it to others and trying to test it in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think rather than trying to jump into the magical end of it, people who are interested in exploring this should probably learn a bit about sexology, physiology, cultural information on sexual practices, and there is a ton of information that's out there. The late 90s saw this rise of a lot of self-described sexperts,
mm-hmm.
some of whom are really good, some of whom are a little bit less. I happen to, you know, people like Tristan Tormino, Dan Savage tends to write very funny stuff, but he's not interested in some of the little more out there material, at least related to things like Tantra or stuff like that. That there's been all this material that is very good at teaching you the basics of what sexual anatomy is, what kind of practices people engage in, how to do things and do things in a safe, pleasurable way rather than doing things without knowing what you're supposed to be doing, or things that end up just turning you off to certain things that might be pleasurable and might ultimately be transformative.
Sure. Now, would you say that a lot of this is of what makes sex magic so, I guess, useful to beginners is the fact that it sort of jars them. It's doing something different than what they're used to, and that's part of the reason why it works so well?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, and I think a lot of times, some of it's just based on physiology, that a lot of sexual magical techniques deal with either learning to extend or sometimes even eliminate orgasm experiences,
mm-hmm.
so that you start changing the way that your nervous system responds to sexual signals.
Oh, okay.
And part of it becomes that there are certain, it seems that at certain levels of stimulation, people's physical responses change.
Right.
That where there's that kind of really simple, you know, and Kinsey studied a lot of this stuff, and, you know, Wilhelm Reich before him, of the way that people's sexual responses happen and how in a lot of people, they never really get that deep into the sexual experience where they, you know, they kind of a little bit of stimulation, they have their climax and it's over. And so it's not really a very powerful experience for them, where a lot of times sexual magic, people who take up practicing sexual magic or any other form of, you know, transformative practice associated with sexuality end up confronting a lot of the things that holds them back from deeper experiences, both sexual and even sometimes just in their lives. Wilhelm Reich had a lot of ideas about neuroses associated with the sex drive and body armoring and personality armoring, and proposed a lot of methods mostly related to massage or other ways of manipulating the body that would blow through these various tension points and allow the person to kind of free themselves of these neuroses. And a lot of 20th century sex magical writers have been hugely influenced by Wilhelm Reich. People like Robert Anton Wilson, Anton LaVey,
right.
Israel Regardi, they all sort of looked at Reich's work and pointed and saw this, someone who had no interest, I mean, Reich had no interest in occultism or anything like that, but saw something in his work that related to the other kinds of things that they were experimenting with.
Okay. Yeah, because it's kind of seemed to me like there's sort of two avenues, and I don't know if this is really an east-west as perceived by a Westerner, but with the East, it seems to be like more of a denial of the orgasm. They want you to sort of sublimate it into causing change, and I'm sometimes wondering if, you know, a lot of times,
and this is one of the reasons too why I think a more Polarian approach to sex magic is might be better than just trying to find what traditional wisdom is out there and just copying it straight, is that a lot of times the cultural mores of a given society influence its attitude towards sex and also its attitude towards people who are using sexuality as a distinct practice.
Right.
And so you've got things like Chinese Taoism has, or the Taoist sexual alchemy often has a lot of material about having men not achieve ejaculation, is the idea is that a tremendous amount of, you know, their essential energy will be lost in the process, and
right.
you know, you can't afford to lose all that energy. And It's an interesting idea. I kind of understand where they probably came up with this, but most of the research into how people react to, you know, orgasm and what kind of physiological effects have it don't play these ideas out. That, you know, while this worked in this time period and does have some, probably the practice of denial effects, you know, essentially super stimulating the nervous system, it's not really necessary. And that's where, you know, learning the anatomy, learning the physiology, you can start experimenting with these sorts of practices in a practical way to see what responses you get from it, but you don't have to run with them whole cloth. But yeah, there is this kind of divide where typically when people are writing about sex magic, they do kind of posit the, you know, the Eastern tradition says orgasm's bad and the Western tradition says orgasm's good if it's focused.
And on the Western side, what I tend to see is that it's more of sort of breaking down your own personal barriers, you know, like, I would never do something like that. Well, maybe you should try it. And by doing something you wouldn't normally do is going to help cause a transformation in you. Now, I mean, obviously, you know, this sort of thing applies to many other things, you know, if you...
Oh, sure. Novel experiences causes... The consciousness responds well to novel experiences and often, you know, gets past its own ideas of what its achievable reality is by violating it.
Right. I mean, I had one friend who had a fear of flight, fear of heights, and he ended up getting a friend of his to do a tandem hang gliding with him. And
okay.
You know, I was kind of thinking like, oh, Jesus, you know, having nothing but, you know, a few pieces of metal and some sheeting holding you up. That's
a hell of a way to confront your fear.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, that's kind of like, I'm afraid of heights, so I'm going to jump off the Golden Gate Bridge. And I mean, I can see that. I mean, I can see that a lot. It's simple.
Well, I think some of the, I hate saying this, but some of the reason why you hear a lot of people talking about this, you know, the need to break taboos and to break sexual taboos and, you know, in order to truly understand sexual initiation, you're going to have to, you know, submit to these kinds of things from someone else. It's kind of a come on.
Yeah.
A lot of people will talk a lot about sex magic or, you know, anything dealing with sexuality as kind of a pickup line. And when you create a situation where someone's speaking about like, oh, I'm a heavily attained sexual initiate and you're not, but if you want to become a serious sexual initiate, you have to go through me.
Yeah. And that was something I wanted to bring up too is, you know, I mean, I have heard stories of people getting involved with sex magic rituals with other people. And I'm just kind of like, oh, you didn't catch that? Oh my God.
As far as I can tell, you know, initiation is not a sexually contracted disease. You're not going to catch it from somebody.
Right.
You know, you have to do your own work. There's not like there's some sort of magical essence that's provided to somebody else by engaging in sex with them.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems, I mean, even things I've read in books where someone has said, and he promised me the attainment of ultimate knowledge, and so I got on my knees, and I'm like... You fell for that one.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of times. I mean, there's a very cynical approach to a lot of this that many people take, and which has led people who've, you know, seriously looked at initiatory pursuits to kind of dismiss things like sex magic because it does tend to attract a lot of smarmy characters.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that it's folks who... I think Phil Hine had this line about people who try to engage in sex magic as a desperate chance to finally lose their virginity.
Yeah, I can
definitely see that. There's just a lot of smarmy crap that goes with it. And anytime that you deal with, you know, the notion that... Well, I think anytime you've got a group of people who set themselves up as, you know, we have the real gnosis and you can only get it from us. Just do what we tell you and, you know, you'll achieve enlightenment. Back away. Especially if it involves your money, your sex life, your property.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And I mean, that's kind of, it's really a tough kind of thing, I guess, for some people to see at times. Because, I mean, I have read some of these reports, you know, like I had said earlier, and it just seems so obvious. Or if the person really wasn't trying to take advantage of the individual, they were doing a bad way to not look like they were taking advantage of the individual.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of... It's definitely dicey territory. I think part of the problem that goes along with it, or one of the challenges that goes along with this, is learning how to really understand and communicate what your own desires are and why it is that you're engaging in these kinds of practices. It's not something that you just do something because someone tells you you ought to do it. And this goes back to this notion of trying to create a Polarian approach. This is about your magical explorations, whether they're into sexuality or combat arts or any field, are ultimately about your own life and your own and the fulfillment of your own desires. And if something doesn't jive with what you really desire, don't push yourself on it. You know, in the same way that there are some people who really enjoy certain types of, you know, foods or certain activities. Some stuff you're going to be interested in, some stuff you're not, and you shouldn't feel that you ought to do something just because someone else, even someone you respect, happens to be interested in it.
Sure. So you really wouldn't say that, I mean, even though a lot of people tend to get hung up on wanting to get involved with sex magic, it's really not something that everyone should be involved with.
No, not at all. If you don't feel attracted to it, if it doesn't call out to something in your own, for lack of a better term, essence, there's no reason to try it. It's not going to mean anything to you. If you're doing it because you think, well, I'm trying to be a magician or I'm trying to be an initiate, this is what I'm supposed to do, you're not going to get that much out of it. You know, it's like trying to force yourself to learn about some tradition that just doesn't do anything for you.
Sure.
You know, and it applies as much to sex magic as it does to, say, learning about, you know, the Kabbalah or learning about the runes. But if there doesn't seem to be this kind of call to this topic, if you don't get a real sense that there's a mystery here that you need to know something about for you to continue to do your own work, it's not really worth pursuing deeply. It might be worth learning a little bit about so that, you know, you have some idea of what the topic is, but not taking a really deep approach to it.
Right. And then also the other thing that has to be dealt with is if you do get involved with it, I would assume, you know, you're going to have some people who just get so into the boinking for transformation, so to speak, that they lose touch of what they're really trying to do.
Oh, yeah. There's a tendency. It becomes, essentially, people end up developing sort of, you know, magic fetishes.
Right.
That in order for them to really get off, they need to have all these sort of ceremonial props around and things like that. And that's fine. I'm okay with anybody. You know, I gave up the I'm okay, you're fucked up thing years ago. So I'm fine if that's what, you know, people have decided that they want in their life and
sure.
You know, whatever makes them happy. But, you know, it's easy to get lost into the sex side of it and just becoming, you know, involved with learning how to fulfill your own desires. Even if that's all that you get out of this kind of practice, is if you learn to become a better sexual communicator and learn how to express to someone what your desires are so that maybe they can help you achieve them, that's probably more potent than learning really complicated terms in Sanskrit.
Right. Yeah,
you know,
I could see
to describe
that.
Parts of your anatomy. I mean, that's something that very few people ever do in their lives. People are getting better at it as more information has been coming out on how you engage in sexual communication, how it is that people talk to each other, how it is that you can try and build a life that's around the fulfillment of your own desires rather than what some outside authority has told you you ought to be doing.
Sure. Well, is there anything that we've left out that you'd like to bring up and add to this so far? Because, I mean, you've done quite a bit of giving information on the subject here, and I think this has been really good, but, I mean, I might have missed asking you something.
Oh, well, I'm sure something will come to me. I mean, I can't really think of anything at the moment that is really pressing on this. I think, actually, there is something. One of the reasons why I mentioned this idea of trying to start a sort of Polarian approach to sex and a Polarian approach to sex magic particularly is that this is where most modern sex magic comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Was an attempt to do this in the early part of the 20th century. The major figures associated with sexual magic in Europe, Theodore Royce, Aleister Crowley, Gregor Gregorius. These were people who were trying to keep up with the then new science of sexology and incorporating this into what they were trying to do. I mean, this was all revolutionary material, and often it would get people in trouble. I mean, one of the most important figures in sex magic was a fellow named Pascal Beverly Randolph, who was an American of mixed racial descent, who a lot of these methods that are associated with, you know, Western ceremonial magic that deal with sexuality come from him. And he ran headlong into problems with the law because of the things he was advocating about, you know, sexual liberty and things like that that were so forbidden at the time period that anyone who took up his ideas afterwards tried to cloak them as much as they could to make sure this information didn't get out.
Sure, I could see that.
But that, you know, the same thing, that rather than trying to go back and just, you know, use what these other people created and assume that they were right about everything, of trying to use the same machinery of trying to get the best current information on, you know, sexology, of getting the best historic information on traditions associated with sexual magic and sexual initiation, tantra, Taoist yoga, and then Western ceremonial magic materials, you know, Randolph's work, Crowley's work, and looking at this and looking at it from a practical vantage point rather than these people said this, I have to do what they said.
Right.
And taking, you know, maybe even some edgier material. I mean, there's, rather than just relying on books, there's been a huge amount of, a huge influx in the last few years of video instructional material on sexuality.
Yeah.
That, you know, sort of, rather than trying to, you know, scratch your head like, how on earth would this work? When you see people engaged in certain practices, it's like, oh, that's what they're doing. Okay. You know, it's not necessarily that I'm, you know, suggesting, well, everyone go out and get a huge porn collection, although, you know, again, I got past that I'm okay, you're a fucked up thing.
Sure.
You know, if that gets you off, go for it. But that, you know, use the resources that are available. And there's a lot more available today than there probably has ever been before in human history.
Yeah, and actually, you know, you've mentioned a lot of these resources, and I just want to make sure everyone knows that in the show notes that are going to be up on the KHPR website, I'll have links to some of the websites that you've recommended, the exact names of the books, so if people want to go out and get them.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Yeah. I can also put together a kind of basic reading list of some ideas if people want to try experimenting with this.
Yeah, and if anyone has any questions, I would heartily ask them to direct them to khpr@kefer.org, and I will pass them along to Fitz, and hopefully we can get an answer back to you on them.
Definitely.
Yeah. And Fitz, I would like to thank you very much for being on the show today. I think this has been a rather excellent way to come back after the hiatus, and I think this has been a very fun and entertaining show that we've done today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, great. Well, this is Eric Caution for KHPR, and I'm going to sign off now, and you will hear from me again shortly.
Butt sex is wonderful.
You've been listening to KHPR, the Sonic Transformations podcast. If you have any questions or comments, you can email them to us at khpr@kefer.org. Thank you for listening, and we hope that we've been able to bring about some change for you.